再进去。And、it looks probable that the tanker got、went down.、was heavy.、one of the manholes was open, got stuck、into the manhole, and、temperature from the brakes or the spark from the brakes、created ignition. And then we have a methane.Igniting the、petroleum products, and then we have a long time heating or just an explosion. But mentioning about the methane, just mentioning, if there was a possibility to think about, they would say,、we don't think it was methane. We don't think that methane was present there. We think that was this and that and this and no.No, no, 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 no. The story given by the people making the news was that a tanker blow up created the pressure into the sewer system. And the gases in the sewer system pushed up other manholes, covers, flying like a coin.If it is rather that, that methane was there present and just waiting for something to ignite it and cause the so, so if, the, if we、
really?
Say theoretically that that information is unpleasant, not expected and unwanted, then we have no words about methane, not even exclusion about methane.We don't have to confirm it, we can exclude it. So my question is, why nobody talks about it? Is it because it is inconvenient in this situation? Or because methane was not there? And to
hear. Let me just reply for a second.
Correct.
What do you answer there? I don't mean to...belabor the point. I just want to understand. If you're saying you want to know why no one is discussing the methane, well, there are two reasons. Either someone or some people determined methane was not a contributing factor and simply never considered it. It wasn't apparent to them as the proximate cause or a contributing factor. Or alternatively, this is all in a hypothetical,that someone is intentionally not discussing it because they may incur liability. This, as a lawyer, I'm trying to understand what's behind your thought.
No, I must agree with you. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's why he says theoretically. Theoretically, we may say that was a methane there. And if it wasn't methane, then the question is,What could cause torch flares from the manholes 10 hours later when we have all fire departments there with all the water that was poured on it and we still have a fire? And to a year.
PhD.
Yes, Jim recognized. I just want to point out that for your own sake, Wesley, you probably should use something other than methane. Swamp gases contain a lot of organic materials that can be vapor, gas, and probably it would be more suitable for your example if you didn't kind of make it all methane, which is, as Jim mentioned, is lighter than air.If you had a manhole cover that was opened, the methane would escape out and there would be no source of it. And it's still highly unlikely that swamp gas can just kind of pump itself across the sewer system producing that torch. It's much more likely that it's either the remains of some of the gasoline that spilled down or the burning insulation of electrical wires in the ground. That's still a lot more likely than, say, methane. But, Jim, you wanted to say something.
Thank you. KD2VHD. Wesley, your suggestion is not impossible. It's just unlikely from my experience and training and knowledge and many years of background. And I've been to many of those type of things and read about more of them. On the other hand, I will tell you this. In 4 decades of fire service experience, I have never, not one single time, seen a event accurately portrayed in the media. Not even close, not even once. So your suspicion of not getting correct information has merit also. But I don't think in this case that's what you're dealing with. I think what you're dealing with is, put it this way, if there's a tanker under a bridge, we will expect the bridge to come down. We will not expect it to stay up. That would not be the norm. Because the steel structure can't take that heat. It expands, it cracks its supports, it turns its spaghetti at 800 degrees, and it falls down. That's what's going to happen. We know that's going to happen. That's not an if. It's going to happen. So I think you're stacking up a couple things, some worthy concerns, but I don't think in this case they add up. Sometimes they do. I don't think in this case they do. Just that's some thoughts. Back to that.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul recognized, and although I understand, Jim, and you've mentioned it before, that the news is very inaccurate, you know, there's inaccurate and then there's just kind of leaping at things that are very dubious, you know, and again, I generally think that the case of news reporters getting most things wrong is more due to incompetence than maliciousness, but, you know, people can have their ideas of what the cause of these things are. I think, as Jim mentioned, you have something that obviously could do something like this and something else that very obviously doesn't, is highly unlikely. So it's kind of like you're looking for a white unicorn, not just an arbitrary unicorn, but a white one. But, Paul, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I keep hearing the word sewer system. It's most likely there's storm drains. There's a big difference between storm drains, which mostly run along the highways, and sewer systems. You know, people think sewer systems is containing possible methane in it, and you know that's where that comes from. But you know, highly unlikely that there's any sewer systems running in that area. They're usually storm drains, and if that tanker, goes on its side and somehow leaks gasoline, 8,000 gallons, part of it is going to run into the storm drains, and at that point, that even hours later, that could reignite and cause a problem with overpressurization inside that storm drain system. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, the only question I have is if it's really what happened, then what blow the bridge? If gasoline went to the sewer system, then what blows the bridge? That doesn't add up. That's what I think would happen. The torch size, Dr. Roy has easy because he has the videos. The torch size is approximately 4 feet wide or 5 feet wide, 5 feet wide and 7 to 10 feet tall. That's the torch. Can you imagine that we don't have a steady torch? We have a blowtorch, like a blowtorch, and that's specific to the methane. I saw it so many times. I saw also that in the furnaces. Where we have metal hardening. Enter here.
Okay. We happen to have a steam fitter who did a lot of welding. So, Paul, are there other gases that are volatile, that cause a flame, that produce a similar pattern in your work experience?
Oh, yeah, there's not gas. But, you know, that's all produced and used
They're in tanks. You know, you have, I'm just thinking that you, there's nothing else that they really use except maybe acetylene. You know, you have acetylene tanks, but that would not be in a sewer system. You know, the only thing that you're going to have in a storm drain system is usually water, you know, from the runoff. That's why, they, you know, you see countless storm manhole covers as you drive along the highway. And if that's what blew off, my guess is the gasoline inside that got inside there. After, you know, and when it goes flipping over, the truck doesn't get stuck. Wesley said stuck in a manhole. They don't have manholes in the middle of the road. These things are on the side of the road. You'll see them as you drive. They're on the side of the road. So, you know, gasoline would probably run from the, you know, from wherever it flipped over down to the side of the road and into a storm drain. But there you go. That's my guess anyway. Before tonight, I wasn't really all that interested in this topic. Now I can't wait until the final reports come out on, you know, on the news in a day or two. Back to you, Roy.
Before you go, actually, in that video number 3, you see exactly squarish, not rectangular, squarish manhole, not rounded, squarish manhole, right in the middle of the road of underpass. And that's where the torch is there. So we're talking torch 10 hours later, and not steady torch, blowing torch, characteristic to methane. And to exit.
Okay, Wes, look, I do not think that there is a characteristic burning of methane. You seem to indicate that there is. Any kind of gas going through an outlet jet will kind of produce a very similar pattern depending upon its temperature and amount of oxygen available. The color will change one way or another. Personally, I think if you popped a drainage ditch, poured a couple of gallons of gasoline into it and lit a fire, you would have pretty much the same exact type of a flame. So I do not agree, and I'll give you the fact that I have no expertise whatsoever in the inherent qualities of propane gas burning versus other flammable materials. But I know of no law of physics that would describe propane gas as having a particular burning characteristic in the pattern of the flames produced. And also, if it was methane, unless you had a steady supply of it someplace, which I tend to doubt it, because then all of the rain gutters would be exploding all over the place. I don't see it. I'm not a person who is a specialist in this field, but just judging from common sense and what I understand about the world, there's numerous easier answers to what's causing those flames than a massive pocket of methane gas suddenly appearing in what probably isn't a sewer system, but just a rain runoff system.
Okay, I'm going to give you the story. Year 2000, I was with USGS. We just got a patent from patent office for underground imaging technology, so we could see everything what's happened, what's beneath the ground to the depth of 2 kilometers, so approximately 1.7 mile. Something like that. And the guy from USGS, he says, you know what? It was last week. I was visiting a site. Actually, they sent 3 of us. This guy and me. And he's showing the other guys from USGS. And say, what happened? Well, the guy went to the pool. He had a nice time there. And he went to sleep.
and in the morning he woke up, and he was sleeping, but he was about to just jump into the pool. But he saw something strange there. There was a sinkhole about 150 feet deep. Humongous sinkhole. Being it dead, what used to be the bottom of his swimming pool. So things happened. And the methane could be just the effect of natural processes taking place. So we don't know, but for me, it looks like a pattern of methane. That's what it looks like. Now, of course, there would be a number of people and professionals giving different stories, but one thing is still not explained. How come 10 hours later we have a 10-foot long torch, 5 feet wide, and not steady torch, but we have a fluctuating torch, like a blowing torch from the manholes, and especially that one that you saw in video number 3. Can you make those videos available so anybody could see, could look at them with my comments on it? Let me drop it. So that video number 3 shows that squarish manhole in the middle of the underpass, not on the side, in the middle of it, without a cover, and a torch blowing out from it. And to XGN.
Well, when I get a chance, I'll put up a link. Again, I don't think that this is indicative of propane. There's a lot of things that produce uneven burning. The source is probably deep down there. The oxygen content is dubious. You know, there are richer oxygen areas and poorer oxygen areas, and so there's fluctuations of the burning flame. And, you know, just a couple of gallons of the many gallons of gasoline that spilled could have spilled down into that basin and provide fuel for a incomplete sooty fire that you see, for a long, long time. I don't think the sooty nature of the fire is also suggestive of propane. I would assume propane would have a much cleaner burn than this is having. So I think that goes counter to what you're suggesting. But, you know, I mean, time will tell unless we all kind of decide that we don't trust anyone, and then probably aliens did it.
Thank you very much. Anybody has a comment? I would appreciate. I'm not saying that I'm right, but I see no explanation to a number of questions. Possibly I'm wrong, but who's going to explain? And how are they going to explain? At least you know the part of the story that is possible. We don't know if that happened. We don't know if there is a cover-up because somebody doesn't want that to ever be told. Or maybe that is just a baloney. Maybe I have a wrong interpretation of the phenomena in question. Dr. Roy.
AC2GS, let me ask you a question, Wes, because I'm scrubbing through. There is a rectangular object in the middle of the road. From this distance, I cannot, and it looks like it's elevated. It is not in line with the pavement. So I cannot perceive whether it is a manhole cover, which I doubt. It looks like it's a piece of debris. If you look further to the left, there's a red piece of debris. A lot of what's going on inside is not visible because of the angle and because of the way that the road kind of squashed half of the stuff down. But I'm not even sure that's a manhole or something like that. It could just be a square piece of metal of the truck or some other debris. Do you know for a fact that it's a manhole?
Now, that video says, look at it 10 seconds only. That's what it says. And then if you look at that hole, you see the torch. The torch is blowing, shortly blowing, and then disappears. Now, that was many hours
later. So you see already the damage happened. There is no fire. The fire department vehicles don't pour the water any longer. But then you see still the fire from that. So if that fire blows, it blows for the reason, right? So if there was a piece of the debris, how come we have a torch? Enter XGN.
Again, because it's a drain hole with gasoline in it. And again, I ask, have you ever seen a propane fire with that much soot? There's something else burning there other than methane. I've never seen methane that sooty. You could take away 99% of the oxygen in the environment. It wouldn't quite be that sooty. So, again, it's not like I'm a fireman. It's not like I'm an expert in this, in anything close to this field. But that sooty fire and flame, to me, doesn't look anything like methane burning.
But it is a torch many hours later. So what is the reason for torch? Not for steady fire. Not for just any fire. For the torch, it blows and disappeared.
Once again, it could very well be gasoline pooling in one of those rain ditches. Someone else wanted to say something. You doubled with them. The other person who wanted to say something, please feel free.
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
So, Wesley, what you're describing really sounds to me, and I haven't watched the videos. I'm in the mobile right now. But what you're describing to me sounds like what's called an oxygenated fire. In a situation where there's not a ready supply of oxygen, fire needs heat, oxygen, and fuel to burn. That's the old model of fire triangle. The newer model is a fire tetrahedron where it's fuel, oxygen, heat, and a chemical reaction. But usually it's the first three. In the case of an underground situation like you're talking about there, if you drop 1,000 gallons of gasoline down into some sort of subterranean system, whether it's a manhole, which is usually an electrical system, or a drainage system, that liquid stays there. The liquid doesn't burn, but it's off gases, vapors that do burn, and they need enough heat and enough oxygen to burn. And when they light up, they'll consume the vapors, and then they'll stop burning again until the vapors build up again and the oxygen blows down the hole and the smoke dissipates and it'll light up again. Completely consistent with a gasoline fire below grade. Completely consistent. I can't prove that to you, but it's not consistent with the other things you're suggesting. It is very consistent with a gasoline fire below grade.
Thank you very much for that. Well, the video that I was talking about, that particle frame, was showing the effect of mixture of some gaseous substance. So if we say we have a gasoline mixture, gasoline vapor mixture, that could detonate. We would say that would be similar to that what I describe as a methane mixture with air, with oxygen. So because it happened in the area of manhole, we see that methane is not blowing if it doesn't have enough of the oxygen to create that blow. But if we look at the damages that methane is causing to the underground mines, the first thing that the underground that the people working in the mines are taught when they start to work is, if there is a methane there, close the air. So all of the vents delivering air has to be stopped. And it's contradictory, because if you don't have air, you cannot breathe. But that actually what prevents the
the explosion. So that's what makes me think that this was methane. My English is not perfect, but I'm trying to be as clear as possible. Thank you.
AC2GS, I think you're making yourself clear, certainly to me, Wesley. Again, I just don't agree. I understand that in mines, it's more important to save people from spontaneous explosions than oxygen starvation. So you kind of block the air getting in for the oxygen and lower your risk of an explosion, and then you get everyone out and you try and vent the thing. And in addition, when a mine explodes, it basically explodes. Almost all of the methane and the oxygen kind of detonate simultaneously. It doesn't leave a torch at the mouth of the cave for the next 6 hours. So again, I sincerely disagree with your take of this. This does not strike me as particularly methane induced. And again, you'd need to have a constant flow of methane in order for it to be a torch after 6 hours, which doesn't make a lot of sense. And then if methane doesn't necessarily burn if there's not enough oxygen, but it's still lighter than air and it's going to rise and go out. So it'll dissipate eventually, unless there's a massive tank of it, subterranean tank, for some weird reason. Now, it's possible that there are naturally occurring pockets of natural gas, if people come across those. But again, this is an area I think that's heavily been worked on, and I doubt that there's a massive sinkhole of high concentration methane. Again, because the way the fire is presenting itself is incredibly atypical, in my opinion, for methane gas. But you know, what the heck do I know?
Yeah, I love your skepticism. Because every opinion that is contradicting to that what I'm talking about is actually helping us to understand what's going on. The methane is horizontal in the sewer system, and it doesn't have enough of oxygen to blow up. And eventually it needs ignition. So then when the methane is not steady torching, or steady deliver to have a steady flare. We're talking about a situation where methane is going from some location or pushed from some location, and when it reaches the exit of the manhole, then it creates a mixture with the oxygen, and because the temperature is still there, something is hot, or the flame maybe is still there in a small proportion of it, then it blows up. What we see there is a not steady torch, but blowing up, the fluctuating torch, or disappearing and then coming back. That says about the distribution of methane or the gas, whichever gas it is, not being constant. And to explain.
Okay, but let me ask you, why, in your opinion, is it obviously not gasoline because the tanker was full of it and it spilled it? I mean, I think you're kind of clutching at this, but you haven't really addressed why it couldn't possibly be gasoline that dripped down the hole and is sitting there and partially burning because it's under oxygenated and it's not in an efficient environment to burn the gasoline, as opposed to, again, to me, a propane fire is a constant fire unless you change the pressure, and then you got to explain why you're changing the pressure. So why in your mind is it absolutely positively impossible that it isn't a pool of something along the lines of gasoline at the bottom of the drainage hole?
Yeah, we're looking at the pattern at which a certain phenomena represents itself. I was igniting gasoline, ether, and other flammable materials by myself, and in the lab, and I was looking at them, and I was looking at
at how they ignite and to what they how they burn. So you can put the match into the gasoline. You can try to match it. It's not always easy to do that. But actually, when you have a little vapor on the surface of it, yeah, you can ignite it. And it ignites very quiet. It's not blowing up. It's just it's nothing special. It's like any flammable liquid. Now, when you have the chamber, like in the engine chamber, and then you have that mixture already delivered, now you have an explosion, because the proportions of the gases are mixed to the point to have the highest explosion and then moving the shaft or the cylinder in it. Let me know. That didn't happen there. Over there we have a situation where we don't have a gasoline that was spilled on the ground and it could be ignited and it would just burn. No explosion, because there is nothing around. We have a rapid blow from inside of the manhole, 10 feet tall, 5 feet wide. And it's fire, and then disappeared. And then it happened again, and it's fluctuating from all of the manholes in other videos. So if you look at the other videos, you see them fluctuating also. Okay, and that is for me a mixture, like in the gasoline engine chamber, a mixture. So that mixture would be the mixture of the gas with the oxygen. And additional factor is that there is something hot near the vicinity of the manhole or near the exit of the manhole that ignites it, because it cannot ignite itself, or it's too hot there. So it's not the pattern of burning gasoline. Did you ever burn gasoline by yourself?
VHD.
Yes, Jim. I just want to point out that you're making a couple of suggestions that you can't back. You're kind of indicating that these visual that you see on YouTube are the initiating process. They're not. They're the aftermath after many hours, after the manhole covers or rain drainage or whatever the hell they are popped off for God knows what reason, and this is after the fact. So we're not talking about a clean laboratory. We're not talking about a internal combustion engine. We're talking about a couple of holes in the ground, and 6 hours after a petroleum carrying tanker had a massive fire involved, and so it's a much more complicated thing. But nevertheless, Jim, what would you like to say?
Wesley, I think if you were talking about some deep, dark electromechanical phenomenon, I would have to defer on it. In this case, I respectfully request that you defer to me and ease off on this argument. The fire properties that you're describing are properties of a gaseous fuel that is heavier than air causing that phenomena, which is gasoline vapors. A gaseous fuel that's lighter than air, methane, natural gas, would not cause that phenomena. It would burn steadily at the surface. What you're describing is a heavier than air gaseous fuel, gasoline vapors. What you're describing. So I suggest you take my word and study up on that particular part of the phenomena, and let's move on. Back to that.
I don't think you're saying something different than what I'm saying. It is only that you're using a better English to describe yourself. So my story is like a tanker was going down with material that was heavier than air, and there was some petroleum product. I got stuck or because it was going down, it was using brakes, got stuck in open manhole. Maybe manhole wasn't open, was partially open, whatever. There was something in the sewage system that was a gas. If you don't want me to use the word methane, there was a gas. The spark from the brake system ignited the gas. The torch immediately that was created, that was the mixture, flamed the truck. The truck with the heavier than air material start to burn, but because there was enough of gas from underneath of it, both of those forces created temperature to damage the bridge, or maybe to blow the bridge, lifting it a little and then dropping down. We don't know that. Now, what I would like you to tell me or correct me is what you think is wrong with that story.
Well, your conjectures are not impossible. They're just highly, highly improbable, because all the actual factual things that you presented as facts, your presentation, describing normal gasoline tanker incident under a normal bridge and what would normally happen. There's nothing abnormal about any of that stuff. Your conjecture that you've added in doesn't fit the fact pattern of the story. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just nearly impossible. So consider that.
So then the only question was, if there was no methane, forget about the methane. What caused the explosion? In my story, there is a cause of an explosion. It was the methane that was ignited, or gas from the sewer system that was ignited because of the brake system of the truck, and then ignited the truck. Because it was the torch that was many hours later also present there. But let's say we exclude the methane. What would possibly be able to create an explosion of the tanker that didn't really collide with anything? And to actually
end. You said that I heard somebody describe the tanker as being turned over. It's very easy to crash a tanker. It's a lot harder to keep them actually on their wheels. They're a bomb going down the road, and we occasionally are reminded of it. Most of the times we ignore it. But the normal state of affairs, barring very careful, well-functioning drivers, is what happens. It's not abnormal at all.
Okay, so tanker flipped, and then what? For many hours that flare was coming out from all manholes, and you think is that because of what? And that was, even though that part of that gasoline went to a sewer system and then was creating a fire, the remaining part of that fuel that didn't really go to the sewer system was able to damage the bridge. And we know that the section is 100 feet long and about 70 feet wide, five rows. Don't you think that this is not enough of energy when we have a that underpass open from the front and from the rear? And to exhale.
It's not just enough. It will, a tanker fire underneath the bridge will take down the bridge. The bridge may fail immediately, it may fail during the fire, it may fail after the fire, it may have to be taken down, but the bridge will be shot. Bridges usually have exposed steel, they're not built to take the fire. They will be destroyed by the heat of a tanker explosion. It will not survive that assault of fire, ever.
Okay, we think we beat the bridge, the pushes enough with that story. Anybody has a comment? Dr. Roy, please, and to Xia.
Yeah, I think the line would be that we should stop beating a dead bridge, and that overpass is certainly not going to be the same again. So I thank you, Wesley, for bringing up this interesting topic. I thank Jim and Frank and Stu, and I'm sure I left a few other people, and Paul, and then the people that I left out. So I appreciate it all. We'll find out. As time goes on, there'll be reports. It'll be up to each and every one of us whether we believe it 100% or 70% or 0.2%. But I'm sure we will hear more about this as the days and weeks progress. So, having kicked this poor, unfortunate, dead overpass, I remain AC2GS, Roy, and this remains the Limark Technical Net. And if anyone else out there has any topics for discussion tonight, we still have a little bit of time. So please hit that push-to-talk button and say your piece.
WB2BXO.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, I have a question on a completely different issue. I was wondering if anybody here is familiar with an older TV, an extended definition TV, EDTV. I bought one for my wife. It was a nice 14-inch flat screen, and I, years ago, before we all had the 40-inch and 50-inch thing, I said, oh, good, a nice flat screen TV for the bedroom. Anyway, turns out it's so-called EDTV, extended definition TV. And I'm trying to figure out what this thing's compatible with. Franny wanted to plug it into her old VCR and watch her VCR tapes. And it appears to actually be more compatible with digital TV. So I was wondering if anybody here is familiar with these old TVs before I just tell us to get it, type to throw the thing out. Go ahead.
Yeah, Frank. It stands for, I believe, enhanced definition television, and I think it's a digital mode. It's not analog, so I don't think it's quite NTSC. It's some variation, I think, on early digital.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was actually very annoyed when I discovered a couple of years ago that it is not actually an HDTV. I guess at the time I bought it for her, this was all kind of new, and I didn't really know the difference or think to look closely at the labeling and see whether it was really an HDTV or not. So I think that essentially answers the question. No, it will not work with the old VHS VCR. Go ahead.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, the VCR should have composite cables on the back, you know. You should be able to plug an audio cable in, two video cables, and plug that into this TV. There must be a way to, the inputs on it must have that if it's the digital.
Well, it sort of depends on what the TV has as inputs. Frank, does it have anything other than an RF signal going into it? If it's other than RF, yeah, you might play something on it. I don't know. But my guess would be that it doesn't have a digital input. It has more of an RF input, and the RF is digitally encoded in that for whatever use that might be.
I think I have the modulator. I have that on one of my VCRs. You know, it just converts it to a RF signal that goes into an old-fashioned CRT screen.
Yeah, I'll have to take another look at the back of this thing, but it may have a composite video connections, in which case, if I can connect the VCR with the red, green, and blue cables, it should work. Is that correct? But it will not work just connecting coax from the older VHS machine to the enhanced definition, the EDTV. Go ahead.
Yes, Wes recognized. Let me see if I have the repeater.
If that has the composite input, you're all set. But if it's just got an RF input to it, you know, that, you get a digital modulator, you know, you come out of the VCR with the composite cables, and then the modulator has a coax, you know, for RF, and you would screw that into it. I mean, if that's the only input, you know, that's what I do with old CRT screens. Back to you, Frank.
AC2GS just interposing myself. You might have other problems because, again, this is an off-resolution design. I think it allows for some ridiculous thing like 852 by 480. So if you're putting composite NTSC signals into one end and its display is going to try and decode it as an 852 by 480 matrix, at the very best, you'll have a kind of sub-picture in the upper right-hand corner, and at the very worst, the pixels will just make no sense at all. But it'll be interesting at least to see what happens. Wesley, did you want to make a comment?
You just made it. It is a device that is 480 lines, so 480 by 750. Probably you have a different format, but there were different formats too. There was 576 lines of progressive scan. And yes, it was the early version of high definition. It was called high Q, high quality. So it was NTSC. At that time, we had a system, PAL SECAM, which NTSC was American, PAL was European, and SECAM was communist Soviet. A system, and it was opposed to the interlaced scanning referred as 480i. So now, so then many years later we had 1080p. So the 1080p was 1080 by 1920, but before it was 1920, it was 1080p by 750. But anyhow, that was the old standard back then.
Okay, very good, Wes. So, Frank, general suggestion is plug it into composite inputs if they have composite inputs and come back at a later technical net and tell us what the heck showed up on the screen.
Okay, if Frank still wants to try it, I'll do that. I think what I would get is the picture in the old letterbox we used to see. The HDTVs have composite inputs as well as the what the heck do they call those? I'm drawing a blank on what the connectors are. As long as in addition to the regular connectors, should we be able to connect it to composite video inputs on the regular HDTVs? Go ahead.
No, negative. Pretty much every high-definition television I'm aware of tends to use some version of HDMI, high-definition monitor interface. I think the latest graded is 2.1 and change. There is no analog version. I mean, you can supply an RF stream that's modulated digitally if you have a tuner attached to it, but then that usually outputs to your TV set as an HDMI interface. So all modern high-definition televisions, as far as I'm aware, have digital interfaces and use a lot of digital tricks. If you supply it a relatively low-resolution signal, there's a lot of silicon on modern-day TVs that interpolate a higher-def image. So it's all digital now, all the way down.
I remember there was a time when we had those three colors output from the monitors. Even some flat monitors, they had it too. Do you remember that, Dr. Ray?
Yeah, red, green, and blue. It was very common. I had CRTs that offered that option. You could squeeze a little bit extra resolution, a little bit less noise in the signal. So, yeah, now, those were composite analog signals of the three primary colors, and probably it also had the luminosity signal included as well.
Are we talking about the history of that, the SDTV, which actually did enhanced definition television system belongs to? The SD by itself still remains in use, and it's pretty much used, and I have a device that uses it and costs plenty of money. So the whole film industry and television industry still uses the coaxial cable and coaxial BAT for SD. And you have a monitor that costs from $2,000 to $10,000 that you can buy right now, brand new, that are using the same system. So these two letters actually remain from the old system, but the format changed a little bit and became fully digital. And to XGS.
Okay, I want to give Frank an opportunity to respond as well, so we'll rest the push to talk for a little while and give Frank that opportunity. Standard definition, it was nice, but it was really low resolution. And if you liked standard definition of the old NTSC signals, you probably would love the early VHS and Betamax that had half of that resolution, really. It was only later designs of Super VHS and such where they brought up the lines of resolution a little bit higher. But, you know, I still have 2K televisions. Eventually, I will end up probably replacing them with 4K. But the industry is already producing 8K monitors, so I don't know when or whenever it will stop. But, Frank, let's give Frank an opportunity to respond as well.
Yeah, very good. Okay, that answers my question. So, anyway, if my wife still wants to try it, we'll see if I have some of the RGB cables and see what happens. I appreciate the answer. I didn't really want to get into a two-hour lecture on the topic. Very interesting. And very good to hear there are already conspiracy theories about the bridge collapse a couple of blocks from here. Well, okay, a mile or two, maybe a little more from here. I'll be listening. I probably have to jump away for a couple of minutes, but I'll be back for the SpaceNet, WB2BXO.
Okay, very good, Frank. Thanks for participating. I tend to, if I was a betting man, I would bet against the letterbox possibility. I think you have to involve yourself in a little extra circuitry to center the image. Most likely it'll just spit it out right after, hopefully, a sync signal at the very top. So it'll probably be catacornered on the upper left-hand corner of the display unless it smears the pixels in a much more distorted way. So I look forward to finding out what you find out. So thank you very much, Frank. Yes, Wesley and Paul doubled, so I heard Wesley first and then Paul.
Yep. Today, SD doesn't stay for standard definition. It states for the connection, for the type of connection, the BNC connection that is being used in the managers. Now, Blackmagic makes URSA 12K. 12K. And that one uses a PNC connection and a coaxial cable to transfer the signal, which is raw, to the recorder, because it doesn't have a means for recording 12K inside. I mean, it's good, but the card is too expensive for it. But anyhow, I have plenty of devices. They have that BNC connector, which is right now called SD. So that's what is left over. Other than that, there has nothing to do with 480 lines of the past. The good thing is that there were DVRs, not the DVRs, the VCRs, having those three RCA connectors for the three colors, and you could connect directly the monitor into it, and you could view what that VCR was playing directly from that monitor if you have one. And to XGN.
Okay. You know, I mean, I don't mind RCA connectors. I still use them to this very day. They're all over the place. The bane of my existence and of many people back in the bad old days was Super VHF. The Super VHF connectors were a sort of pseudo-DIN-like connector that had to be lined up perfectly and would fall out of its jack with any odd motion, and was just an awful connector that hopefully I will never see again.
Yeah, talking about the connectors, HDMI. So the HDMI is not perfect. HDMI is something at lower grade than it is SD. So all of the film industry, all of the television, everything that is, if you go to any kind of shows, which is Las Vegas or here in Javits Center, once a year, for the guys who likes digital picture, or motion picture in digital form, you have a plenty of it, everything is on SD. For some devices that are lower in price, they still use HDMI, but HDMI is a rather comfortable something that if you need to use, you must use. But for the quality, is not respected. And so it's here.
Paul recognized, by the way, he's been trying to say something. We'll give him a moment, in just a moment. It probably because they use bayonets, so they can lock it in, as opposed to HDMI, which just holds on friction. That seems to be the commercial video interface connector. All televisions have HDMIs. Most computer monitors have both HDMI, and they have DisplayPort connectors as well. So I think for the foreseeable future, you will continue to see HDMI connectors in consumer products receivers that have video switching and monitors and such. Paul, you want to say something?
I was just going to tell Frank, but that was a while back, but I know he's still listening. The RF modulators, you know, we used to get them, of course, from Radio Shack. They're gone now. But, they still sell them on Amazon for less than $20. An RF modulator, you know, it has a couple of inputs. One for, it's got the composite ones, you know, the red the white and the yellow. And then it's got also RF inputs into that.